Perhaps in his frustration at not being believed, Professor Selden feels he must prove to the worlds that his predictions of doom and gloom really are coming to pass. After all, here is a man who has spent his entire career foretelling the fall of the empire, and all he can really point to are a few burned-out bulbs in the dome, an occasional glitch in public transport, a budget cut here or there. Nothing very dramatic. But an attack, or two or three, now that would be something. Lee sat back and folded her hands in front of her, a satisfied expression on her face. Selden stood, leaning heavily on the table for support. With great effort, he approached the bench, waving off his lawyer, walking headlong into the steely gaze of the judge. Your Honor, please permit me to say a few words in my defense. Of course, Professor Selden. After all, this is not a trial, only a hearing to air all allegations, facts, and theories pertinent to the case before deciding whether or not to go ahead with the trial. I have merely expressed a theory. I am most interested to hear what you have to say. Selden cleared his throat before beginning. I have devoted my life to the Empire. I have faithfully served the Emperors. My science of psychohistory, rather than being a harbinger of destruction, is intended to be used as an agent for rejuvenation. With it, we can be prepared for whatever course civilization takes. If, as I believe, the Empire continues to break down, psychohistory will help us put into place building blocks for a new and better civilization, founded on all that is good from the old. I love our worlds, our peoples, our empire. What would it behoove me to contribute to the lawlessness that saps its strength daily? I can say no more. You must believe me. I, a man of intellect, of equations, of science, I am speaking from my heart. Selden turned and made his way slowly back to his chair beside Palver. Before sitting, his eyes sought Wanda, sitting in the spectators' gallery. She smiled wanly and winked at him. From the heart or not, Professor Selden, this decision will require much thought on my part. We have heard from your accusers. We have heard from you and Mr. Palver. There is one more party whose testimony I need. I'd like to hear from Rial Navas, who has come forward as an eyewitness to this incident. As Navas approached the bench, Selden and Palver looked at each other in alarm. It was the boy whom Harry had admonished just before the attack. Lee was asking the youth a question. Would you describe, Mr. Navas, exactly what you witnessed on the night in question? Well, started Navas, fixing Selden with his sullen stare. I was walking along, minding my own business, when I saw those two. He turned and pointed at Selden and Palver, on the other side of the walkway, coming toward me. And then I saw those three kids. Another point of the finger, this time toward the three sitting at the plaintiff's table. The two older guys were walking behind the kids. They didn't see me, though, on account of I was on the other side of the walkway, and besides, they were concentrating on their victims. Then, wham, just like that, that old guy swings at him with his stick. Then the younger guy jumps him and kicks him, and before you know it, they're all down on the ground. Then the old guy and his pal, they just took off, just like that. I couldn't believe it. That's a lie, Selden exploded. Young man, you're playing with our lives here. Navis only stared back at Selden impassively. Judge, Selden implored, can't you see that he is lying? I remember this fellow. I scolded him for littering just minutes before we were attacked. I pointed it out to Stettin as another instance of the breakdown of our society, the apathy of the citizenry, the... Enough, Professor Selden, commanded the judge. Another outburst like that, and I will have you ejected from this courtroom. Now, Mr. Navas, she said, turning back to the witness, what did you do throughout the sequence of events you just described?
I hid behind some trees. I hid. I was afraid they'd come after me if they saw me, so I hid. And when they were gone, well, I ran and called the security officers.
Navas had started to sweat, and he inserted a finger into the constricting collar of his unisuit. He fidgeted, shifting his weight from one foot to the other as he stood on the raised speaker's platform. He was uncomfortably aware of the crowd's eyes upon him. He tried to avoid looking into the audience, but each time he did, he found himself drawn to the steady gaze of a pretty blonde girl sitting in the first row. It was as if she was asking him a question, pressing him for an answer, willing him to speak. Mr. Navas, what do you have to say about Professor Selden's allegation that he and Mr. Halver did see you prior to the attack, that the professor actually exchanged words with you?
Well, no, you see, it was just like I said. I was walking along.
And now Navas looked over at Selden's table. Selden looked at the young man sadly, as if he realized all was lost. But Selden's companion, Stettin Palver, turned a fierce gaze on Navas, and Navas jumped, startled, at the words he heard. Tell the truth. It was as if Palver had spoken, but Palver's lips hadn't moved. And then, confused, Navas snapped his head in the direction of the blonde girl. He thought he heard her speak. Tell the truth. But her lips were still as well. Mr. Navas! Mr. Navas! The judge's voice broke in on the youth's jumbled thoughts. Mr. Navas, if Professor Selden and Mr. Palver were walking toward you, behind the three plaintiffs, how is it that you noticed Selden and Palver first? That is how you put it in your statement, is it not? Navas glanced around the courtroom wildly. He couldn't seem to escape the eyes. All the eyes screaming at him to tell the truth. Looking over at Harry Selden, Riel Navas said simply, I'm sorry. And to the amazement of the entire courtroom assemblage, the 14-year-old boy started to cry. Chapter 27. It was a lovely day, neither too warm nor too cold, not too bright nor too gray. Even though the groundskeeping budget had given out years ago, the few straggly perennials lining the steps leading up to the Galactic Library managed to add a cheerful note to the morning. The library, having been built in the classical style of antiquity, was fronted with one of the grandest stairways to be found in the entire empire, second only to the steps at the Imperial Palace itself. Most library visitors, however, preferred to enter via the glide rail. Selden had high hopes for the day. Since he and Stettin Palver had been cleared of all charges in their recent assault and battery case, Harry Selden felt like a new man. Although the experience had been painful, its very public nature had advanced Selden's cause. Judge Tehan Pupjins Lee, who was considered one of, if not the most influential judge on Trentor, had been quite vociferous in her opinion, delivered the day following Riel Navas's emotional testimony. When we come to such a crossroads in our civilized society, the judge intoned from her bench, that a man of Professor Harry Selden's standing is made to bear the humiliation, abuse, and lies of his peers simply because of who he is and what he stands for, it is truly a dark day for the Empire. I admit that I, too, was taken in at first.
Why wouldn't Professor Selden, I reasoned, resort to such trickery in an attempt to prove his predictions? But as I came to see, I was most grievously wrong. Here the judge's brow furrowed. A dark blue flush began creeping up her neck and into her cheeks. For I was ascribing to Professor Selden motives born of our new society, a society in which honesty, decency, and goodwill are likely to get one killed, a society in which it appears one must resort to dishonesty and trickery merely to survive. How far we have strayed from our founding principles. We were lucky this time, fellow citizens of Trantor. We owe a debt of thanks to Professor Harry Selden for showing us our true selves. Let us take his example to heart and resolve to be vigilant against the baser forces of our human nature. Following the hearing, the Emperor had sent Selden a congratulatory holodisc. On it, he expressed the hope that perhaps now Selden would find renewed funding for his project. As Selden slid up the entrance glide rail, he reflected on the current status of his psychohistory project. His good friend, the former chief librarian Las Zenov, had retired. During his tenure, Zenov had been a strong proponent of Selden and his work. More often than not, however, Zenov's hands had been tied by the library board. But, he had assured Selden, the affable new chief librarian, Trima Acarnio, was as progressive as he himself, and was popular with many factions among the board membership. "Harry, my friend," Zenov had said before leaving Trantor for his home world of Wenkuri, "Acarnio is a good man, a person of deep intellect and an open mind. I'm sure he'll do all that he can to help you and the project. I've left him the entire data file on you and your encyclopedia. I know he'll be as excited as I about the contribution to humanity it represents. Take care, my friend. I'll remember you fondly." And so today, Harry Selden was to have his first official meeting with the new chief librarian. He was cheered by the reassurances Las Zenov had left with him, and he was looking forward to sharing his plans for the future of the project and the encyclopedia. Trima Acarnio stood as Harry entered the chief librarian's office. Already he had made his mark on the place, whereas Zenov had stuffed every nook and cranny of the room with holodisks and tri-D journals from the different sectors of Trantor, and a dizzying array of visiglobes representing various worlds of the Empire had spun in mid-air, Acarnio had swept clear the mounds of data and images that Zenov had liked to keep at his fingertips. A large holoscreen now dominated one wall, on which, Selden presumed, Acarnio could view any publication or broadcast that he desired. Acarnio was short and stocky, with a slightly distracted look from a childhood corneal correction that had gone awry, that belied a fearsome intelligence and constant awareness of everything going on around him at all times. "Well, well, Professor Selden, come in, sit down." Acarnio gestured to a straight-backed chair facing the desk at which he sat. "It was, I felt, quite fortuitous that you requested this meeting. You see, I had intended to get in touch with you as soon as I settled in." Selden nodded, pleased that the new chief librarian had considered him enough of a priority to plan to seek him out in the hectic early days of his tenure. "But first, Professor, please let me know why you wanted to see me before we move on to my most likely more prosaic concerns." Selden cleared his throat and leaned forward. "Chief Librarian, Las Zenov has no doubt told you of my work here and of my idea for an Encyclopedia Galactica. Las was quite enthusiastic and a great help, providing a private office for me here and unlimited access to the library's vast resources. In fact, it was he who located the eventual home of the Encyclopedia Project, a remote outer world called Terminus. There was one thing, however, that Lass could not provide. In order to keep the project on schedule, I must have office space and unlimited access granted to a number of my colleagues as well. It is an enormous undertaking, just gathering the information to be copied and transferred to Terminus before we can begin the actual work of compiling the encyclopedia. Lass was not popular with the library board, as you undoubtedly are aware. You, however, are. And so I ask you, Chief Librarian, will you see to it that my colleagues are granted insider's privileges so that we may continue our most vital work? Here Harry stopped, almost out of breath. He was sure that his speech, which he had gone over and over in his mind the night before, would have the desired effect. He waited, confident in Acarnio's response. "Professor Selden," Acarnio began. Selden's expectant smile faded. There was an edge to the chief librarian's voice that Selden had not expected. "My esteemed predecessor provided me, in exhaustive detail, an explication of your work here at the library. He was quite enthusiastic about your research and committed to the idea of your colleagues joining you here, as was I, Professor Selden." At Acarnio's pause, Selden looked up sharply. "At first, I was prepared to call a special meeting of the board to propose that a larger suite of offices be prepared for you and your encyclopedists. But, Professor Selden, all that has now changed."
"Changed? But why?"
"Professor Selden, you have just finished serving as principal defendant in a most sensational assault and battery case."
"But I was acquitted," Selden broke in. "The case never even made it to trial."
"Nonetheless, Professor, your latest foray into the public eye has given you an undeniable, how shall I say it, tinge of ill repute. Oh yes, you were acquitted of all charges. But in order to get to that acquittal, your name, your past, your beliefs, and your work were paraded before the eyes of all the worlds. And even if one progressive, right-thinking judge has proclaimed you faultless, what of the millions, perhaps billions, of other average citizens who see not a pioneering psychohistorian striving to preserve his civilization's glory, but a raving lunatic shouting doom and gloom for the great and mighty empire? You, by the very nature of your work, are threatening the essential fabric of the empire. I don't mean the huge, nameless, faceless, monolithic empire. No, I am referring to the heart and soul of the empire, its people. When you tell them the empire is failing, you are saying that they are failing. And this, my dear professor, the average citizen cannot face. Selden, like it or not, you have become an object of derision, a subject of ridicule, a laughingstock."
"Pardon me, Chief Librarian, but for years now I have been, to some circles, a laughingstock."
"Yes, but only to some circles. But this latest incident, and the very public forum in which it was played out, has opened you up to ridicule, not only here on Trentor, but throughout the worlds. And, Professor, if by providing you an office, we, the Galactic Library, give tacit approval to your work, then, by inference, we, the Library, also become a laughingstock throughout the worlds. And no matter how strongly I may personally believe in your theory and your encyclopedia, as Chief Librarian of the Galactic Library on Trentor, I must think of the library first. And so, Professor Selden, your request to bring in your colleagues is denied."
Harry Selden jerked back in his chair as if struck. "Further," Acarnio continued,
I must advise you of a 2-week temporary suspension of all library privileges, effective immediately. The board has called that special meeting, Professor Selden. In 2 weeks' time, we will notify you whether or not we've decided that our association with you must be terminated.
Here, Acarnio stopped speaking, and placing his palms on the glossy, spotless surface of his desk, stood up.
That is all, Professor Selden, for now.
Harry Selden stood as well, although his upward movement was not as smooth nor as quick as Trima Acarnio's.
May I be permitted to address the board? Asked Selden.
Perhaps if I were able to explain to them the vital importance of psychohistory and the encyclopedia.
I'm afraid not, Professor,
said Acarnio softly.
And Selden caught a brief glimmer of the man Lass Zenov had told him about.
But just as quickly, the icy bureaucrat was back, as Acarnio guided Selden to the door.
As the portal slid open, Acarnio said, 2 weeks, Professor Selden. Till then.
Harry stepped through to his waiting skitter, and the doors slid shut.
What am I going to do now? Wondered Selden disconsolately. Is this the end of my work?
Chapter 28.
Wanda, dear, what is it that has you so engrossed? Asked Harry Selden as he entered his granddaughter's office at Streeling University.
The room had been the office of the brilliant mathematician Hugo Amaril, whose death had impoverished the psychohistory project. Fortunately, Wanda had gradually taken over Hugo's role in recent years, further refining and adjusting the prime radiant.
Why, I'm working on an equation in section 33A2D17. See, I've recalibrated this section.
She gestured to a glowing violet patch suspended in midair in front of her face.
Taking into consideration the standard quotient and... There, just what I thought. I think.
She stepped back and rubbed her eyes.
What is it, Wanda?
Harry moved in closer to study the equation.
Why, this looks like the terminus equation, and yet...
Wanda, this is an inverse of the terminus equation, isn't it?
Yes, Grandpa. See, the numbers weren't working quite right in the terminus equation. Look.
Wanda touched a contact in a recessed wall strip, and another patch sprang to life in vivid red on the other side of the room. Selden and Wanda walked over to inspect it.
You see how it's all hanging together fine now, Grandpa? It's taken me weeks to get it this way.
How did you do it? Asked Harry, admiring the equation's lines, its logic, its elegance.
At first, I concentrated on it from over here only. I blocked out all else. In order to get terminus to work on terminus, stands to reason, doesn't it? But then I realized that I couldn't just introduce this equation into the prime radian system and expect it to blend right in smoothly as if nothing happened. A placement means a displacement somewhere else. A weight needs a counterweight.
I think the concept to which you are referring is what the ancients called yin and yang.
Yes, more or less. Yin and yang. So you see, I realized that to perfect the yin of terminus, I had to locate its yang, which I did, over there.
She moved back to the violet patch, tucked away at the outer edge of the prime radiant sphere.
And once I adjusted the figures here, the terminus equation fell into place as well. Harmony.
Wanda looked pleased with herself, as if she'd solved all the problems of the Empire. Fascinating, Wanda,
and later on you must tell me what you think it all means for the project. But right now you must come with me to the holoscreen. I received an urgent message from Santani a few minutes ago. Your father wants us to call him immediately.
Wanda's smile faded. She had been alarmed at the recent reports of fighting on Santani. As imperial budget cutbacks went into effect, the citizens of the outer world suffered most. They had limited access to the richer, more populous inner worlds, and it became more and more difficult to trade their world's products for much-needed imports. Imperial hyperships going in and out of Santani were few, and the distant world felt isolated from the rest of the empire. Pockets of rebellion had erupted throughout the planet.
"Grandfather, I hope everything's all right," said Wanda, her fear revealed by her voice.
"Don't worry, dear. After all, they must be safe if Rach was able to send us a message." In Selden's office, he and Wanda stood before the holoscreen as it activated. Selden punched a code on the keypad alongside the screen, and they waited a few seconds for the intragalactic connection to be established. Slowly, the screen seemed to stretch back into the wall, as if it were the entrance to a tunnel. And out of the tunnel, dimly at first, came the familiar figure of a stocky, powerfully built man. As the connection sharpened, the man's features became clearer. When Selden and Wanda were able to make out Rach's bushy, doll-like mustache, the figure sprang to life.
"Dad, Wanda," said Rach's three-dimensional hologram, projected to Trantor from Santani.
"Listen, I don't have much time."
He flinched as if startled by a loud noise.
"Things have gotten pretty bad here. The government has fallen, and a provisional party has taken over. Things are a mess, as you can imagine. I just put Manella and Bellis on a hypership to Anacreon. I told them to get in touch with you from there. The name of the ship is the Arcadia 7. You should have seen Manella, Dad, mad as anything that she had to go. The only way I was able to convince her to leave was to point out that it was for Bellis's sake."
"I know what you're thinking, Dad and Wanda. Of course I would have gone with them, if I could have. But there wasn't enough room. You should have seen what I had to go through just to get them onto the ship."
Rach flashed one of his lopsided grins that Selden and Wanda loved so much, then continued,
"Besides, since I'm here, I have to help guard the university. We may be part of the Imperial University system, but we're a place of learning and building, not of destruction. I tell you, if one of those hot-headed Santani rebels comes near our stuff..."
"Rach," Harry broke in, "how bad is it? Are you close to the fighting?"
"Dad, are you in danger?" asked Wanda.
They waited a few seconds for their message to travel the 9,000 parsecs across the galaxy to Rach.
I couldn't quite make out what you said," the hologram replied. "There's a bit of fighting going on. It's sort of exciting, actually,"
Rach said, breaking into that grin again.
"So I'm going to sign off now. Remember, find out what happened to the Arcadia 7 going to Anacreon. I'll be back in touch as soon as I'm able. Remember, I..."
The transmission broke off, and the hologram faded. The holoscreen tunnel collapsed in on itself, so that Selden and Wanda were left staring at a blank wall.
"Grandpa," said Wanda, "what do you think he was going to say?"
"I have no idea, dear. But there is one thing I do know, and that is that your father can take care of himself. I pity any rebel who gets near enough for a well-placed twist kick from your dad. Come, let's get back to that equation, and in a few hours we'll check on the Arcadia 7.
"Commander, have you no idea what happened to the ship?"
Harry Seldon was again engaged in intergalactic conversation. But this time, it was with an Imperial Navy commander stationed at Anacreon. For this communication, Seldon was making use of the visiscreen, much less realistic than the holoscreen, but also much simpler.
"I'm telling you, Professor, that we have no record of that hypership requesting permission to enter the Anacreonic atmosphere. Of course, communications with Santani have been broken for several hours, and sporadic at best for the last week. It is possible that the ship tried to reach us on a Santani-based channel and could not get through, but I doubt it. No, it's more likely that the Arcadia 7 changed destination. Voreg, perhaps, or Serip. Have you tried either of those worlds, Professor?"
"No," said Seldon wearily. "But I see no reason, if the ship was bound for Anacreon, that it would not go to Anacreon. Commander, it is vital that I locate that ship."
"Of course," the commander ventured. "The Arcadia 7 might not have made it. Out safely, I mean. There's a lot of fighting going on. Those rebels don't care who they blow up. They just train their lasers and pretend it's the Emperor Aegis they're blasting. I tell you, it's a whole different game out here on the fringe, Professor."
"My daughter-in-law and granddaughter are on that ship, Commander," Seldon said in a tight voice.
"Oh, I'm sorry, Professor," said an abashed commander. "I'll be in touch with you as soon as I hear anything."
Dispiritedly, Harry closed the visiscreen contact. "How tired I am," he thought. "And," he mused, "I'm not surprised. I've known that this would come for nearly 40 years. Seldon chuckled bitterly to himself. Perhaps that commander had thought he was shocking Seldon, impressing him with the vivid detail of life on the fringe. But Seldon knew all about the fringe. And as the fringe came apart, like a piece of knitting with one loose thread, the whole piece would unravel to the core. Trantor. Seldon became aware of a soft buzzing sound. It was the door signal.
"Yes?"
"Grandpa," said Wanda, entering the office. "I'm scared." "Why, dear?" asked Seldon with concern. He didn't want to tell her yet what he had learned, or hadn't learned, from the commander on Anacreon. "Usually, although they're so far away, I feel Dad and Mom and Bellis. Feel them in here." She pointed to her head. "And in here." She placed her hand over her heart. "But now, today, I don't feel them. It feels less, as if they're fading, like one of the dome bulbs. And I want to stop it. I want to pull them back, but I can't."
"Wanda, I really think this is merely a product of your concern for your family in light of the rebellion. You know that uprisings occur all over the Empire all the time, little eruptions to let off steam. Come now, you know the chances of anything happening to Rach, Manella, or Bellis are vanishingly small. Your dad will call any day to say all is well. Your mom and Bellis will land on Anacreon at any moment and enjoy a little vacation. We're the ones to be pitied. We're stuck here, up to our ears in work. So, sweetheart, go to bed and think only good thoughts. I promise you, tomorrow, under the sunny dome, things will look much better."
"All right, Grandpa," said Wanda, not sounding entirely convinced. "But tomorrow, if we haven't heard by tomorrow, we'll have to...
"Wanda, what can we do except wait?" asked Harry, his voice gentle.
Wanda turned and left, the weight of her worries showing in the slope of her shoulders. Harry watched her go, finally allowing his own worries to come to the surface.
It had been 3 days since the hologram transmission from Raich. Since then, nothing. And today, the naval commander at Anacreon denied ever having heard of a ship called Arcadia 7. Harry had tried earlier to get through to Raich on Santani, but all communication beams were down. It was as if Santani, and the Arcadia 7, had simply broken off from the Empire like a petal from a flower. Selden knew what he had to do now. The Empire might be down, but it was not out. Its power, when properly wielded, was still awesome. Selden placed an emergency transmission to Emperor Aegis XIV. Chapter 29.
What a surprise, my friend Harry! Aegis's visage beamed at Selden through the holoscreen. I am glad to hear from you, although you usually request the more formal personal audience. Come, you've piqued my interest. Why the urgency?
Sire, began Selden, my son Raich and his wife and daughter live on Santani.
Ah, Santani,
the Emperor said as his smile faded.
A bunch of misguided wretches, if I ever...
Sire, please, broke in Selden, surprising both the Emperor and himself with this flagrant breach of Imperial protocol. My son was able to get Manella and Velis onto a hypership, the Arcadia 7, bound for Anacreon. He, however, had to remain. That was 3 days ago. The ship has not landed at Anacreon, and my son seems to have disappeared. My calls to Santani have gone unanswered, and now the communication beams are broken. Please, sire, can you help me?
Harry, as you know, officially all ties between Santani and Trantor have been severed. However, I still hold some influence in selected areas of Santani. That is, there are still a few loyal to me who have not yet been found out. Although I cannot make direct contact with any of my operatives on that world, I can share with you any reports I receive from there. These are, of course, highly confidential. But considering your situation and our relationship, I will allow you access to those pieces that might interest you. I am expecting another dispatch within the hour. If you like, I'll recontact you when it arrives. In the meantime, I'll have one of my aides go over all transmissions from Santani for the past 3 days to look for anything pertaining to Raich, Manella, or Bella Selden.
Thank you, sire. I thank you most humbly. And Harry Selden dipped his head as the Emperor's image faded from the holoscreen. 60 minutes later, Harry Selden was still sitting at his desk, waiting to hear from the Emperor. The past hour had been one of the most difficult he had ever spent, second only to the hours after Dora's destruction. It was the not knowing that did Harry in. He had made a career of knowing, the future as well as the present. And now he had no idea at all about three of the people most precious to him. The holoscreen buzzed softly, and Harry pressed a contact in response. Aegis appeared. Harry, began the Emperor. From the soft, slow sadness in his voice, Harry knew this call brought bad news. My son, said Harry.
Yes, replied the Emperor. Raich was killed earlier today in a bombardment on Santani University. I've learned from my sources that Raich knew the attack was coming, but refused to desert his post. You see, a good number of the rebels are students, and Raich felt that if they knew that he was still there, they would never... But hate overcame all reason. The university is, you see, an imperial university. The rebels feel they must destroy all things imperial before rebuilding anew. The fools, why...
And here Aegis stopped, as if suddenly realizing that Selden did not care about Santani University or the plans of the rebels, not right now at least.
Harry, if it makes you feel any better, remember that your son died in defense of knowledge. It was not the Empire Reach fought and died for, but humanity itself.
Selden looked up out of tear-filled eyes. Weakly, he asked, "And Manella and little Bellus, what of them? Have you found the Arcadia Seven?"
"That search has proved fruitless, Harry. The Arcadia Seven left Santani as you were told, but it seems to have disappeared. It may have been hijacked by rebels, or it may have made an emergency detour. At this point, we just don't know."
Selden nodded. "Thank you, Aegis. Although you have brought me tragic news, at least you have brought it. Not knowing was worse. You are a true friend."
"And so, my friend," said the Emperor, "I'll leave you to yourself now, and your memories."
The Emperor's image faded from the screen as Harry Selden folded his arms in front of him on his desk, put his head down, and wept. Chapter 30 Wanda Selden adjusted the waistband of her unisuit, pulling it a little tighter around her middle. Taking up a hand hoe, she attacked some weeds that had sprung up in her small flower garden outside the Psychohistory building at Streeling. Generally, Wanda spent the bulk of her time in her office, working with her Prime Radiant. She found solace in its precise statistical elegance. The unvarying equations were somehow reassuring in this empire gone so crazy. But when thoughts of her beloved father, mother and baby sister became too much to bear, when even her research could not keep her mind off the horrible losses she'd so recently undergone, Wanda invariably found herself out here, scratching at the terraformed ground, as if coaxing a few plants to life might somehow, in some tiny measure, ameliorate her pain. Since her father's death a month ago, and the disappearance of Manella and Bellus, Wanda, who had always been slim, had been losing weight. Whereas a few months ago Harry Selden would have been concerned over his darling granddaughter's loss of appetite, now he, stuck in his own grief, seemed not to notice. A profound change had come over Harry and Wanda Selden, and the few remaining members of the Psychohistory Project. Harry seemed to have given up. He now spent most of his days sitting in an armchair in the Streeling Solarium, staring out at the university grounds, warmed by the bright bulbs overhead. Occasionally, project members told Wanda that his bodyguard, a man named Stetton Palver, would badger Selden into a walk out under the dome, or try to engage him in a discussion of the future direction of the project. Wanda retreated deeper into her study of the Prime Radiant's fascinating equations. She could feel the future her grandfather had worked so hard to achieve finally taking shape. And he was right.